You're listening to the Mets Blog Q&A Cast, presented by Citi, your podcast for one-on-one Mets conversations.
What's up, Mets fans? I'm Matt Cerrone, and thanks for listening to the Mets Blog Q&A Cast, presented by Citi. Mets home runs go a lot further than you think. For every Mets home run hit at Citi Field this season, Citi will donate $2,000 to No Kid Hungry to help fight childhood hunger. Every dollar donated provides 10 healthy meals for kids. Last season, the Citi Community Home Runs program raised over $170,000. To learn more, go to Mets.com/Citi. This week, I'm talking to our old friend Will Carroll from FanDuel. He's been covering injuries and covering the medical world of sports for more than a decade. Does a terrific job. He's written for SI, for Bleacher Report, Baseball Prospectus. You've seen his work all over the place. You can follow him at Twitter, at Injury Expert. I always go to him whenever, you know, there's a question about anything medical and sports. And so right now with the Mets, obviously with the situation with David Wright and all the pitchers' elbows, Syndergaard, Wheeler, et cetera, it seemed like a good opportunity to get Will on the phone, talk with him a little bit about some of these injuries and what's going on with the Mets and just the situation around baseball with some of the pitching stuff. So with that, let me run my interview with our good friend, Will Carroll from FanDuel. Obviously, right now, as there's always seems to be the case with the Mets, elbows are top of everybody's mind, given how reliant they are on the pitching staff. Just real quick, from a news perspective, what do you know or what do you think about sort of what's going on specifically with Noah Syndergaard, who hasn't really come up with an injury, but he's talked of discomfort and he's gone for, you know, exams and gone for MRIs, but he's still throwing, he's still pitching. What do you see with Noah and sort of where he is in this news cycle and in just, you know, his arm and his mechanics and everything?
Yeah, it's certainly worrisome anytime you have a pitcher pulling themselves. That's a situation you don't see. Pitchers are very, very ultra competitive people. You see it when the manager comes out to try to take the ball from them. In this day and age, they know when they're over 100 pitches. They know when their leash has run out. And they also know the game situation, but they'll still fight it. So when you see a guy, especially a young guy like Syndergaard, pulling himself from the game because of discomfort, first you have to say, okay, good. He trusts the medical staff. He trusts the manager enough to say, okay, I've got a problem, rather than trying to hide it, pitch through it, and make it worse. But you know, it's a situation where you have to say, okay, there's pain. Okay, somebody on Twitter was killing me because I said pain, discomfort. Something was wrong. Something's going on. And, you know, with a pitcher, you have to assume that it's the elbow. They looked at it. They got Dave Olczyk to look at it, one of the best in the world. So it's good that there's no structural damage, but now you have to come back and say, okay, if it's not structural damage, if the ligament is okay, what's causing the pain? You know, it could be something very simple. It could be a little bit of ulnar neuritis. He could have, you know, just stretched it a little bit, had the bones banging together. That'd be bad in the long term, but in the short term, not so bad. So there's an underlying cause. Now you get into the tough part. What do you do about it? If you're Dan Worthen and you're looking at Noah Syndergaard and he's got pain on the one hand and exceptional results on the other, what do? Do you change him? Would you be willing to go in season and change his mechanics? That'd be next to impossible. And if you did it, you're going to change how his muscles, ligaments, tendons, all those things work together. You're going to change something with as much force as he's putting on that arm, on the fastball, on that power slider. I don't know what's going to happen. He's been doing this motion for I don't know how long, at least 10 years. And everything seems to work together. Changing is really, really difficult. One of the exercises I always tell people is change how you walk. Just change how you walk. Right. When you're walking, land on your toes. It's not natural, but, you know, it's not that crazy. But do it. Just walk around the house a little bit and just make sure you're landing on your toes. You have to think about every single step. And you feel awkward and you're walking slower. And if somebody's watching you, you're probably, you know, looking completely weird. It's really tough. So the Mets are in a very, very tough situation with Syndergaard. I hope it works out. He's one of the most fun pitchers to watch. But he's also one of the riskiest because he's putting so much force on his arm with each and every pitch. And we don't know if it's too much. The one thing I do knock the Mets on and there's like 27 other teams. They don't do biomechanical studies on their pitchers, so we don't know just how much force is on that arm. Maybe it's like Francisco Rodriguez, where it looks awkward, where it looks forceful, but really isn't. His arm's been fine for many years because of it. You can't eyeball this thing, and I wish they'd do that with Syndergaard, especially now.
Does it matter, or do you think it's a red flag at all that he has gone for some form of examination, whether it's an MRI or, you know, just a check-in with the doctor, whatever it is, seemingly every 3 to 6 months over the last couple years. You know, I think the first reports of some elbow discomfort was a couple years ago, definitely 2 springs ago. He had an issue right before he was called up to the big leagues that they talked about. So, I mean, he's got a history of I don't know what the word, complaint, but nothing.
Discomfort.
Yeah, discomfort, whatever you want to call it.
You're exactly right.
But nothing, you know, no specific injury, no time missed, nothing, you know, major. But it's sort of this underlying thing. Is that, do you think that that's just maintenance? Do the teams do that kind of a thing? Or do you think there's something that, does that say to you, oh, the Mets are aware of something, they're concerned about something, and they're keeping tabs on it? Or is this something that's just a different strategy where they're just sort of monitoring him in a really more, you know, close-knit kind of a way?
Yeah, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea. And to some level, they're doing maintenance. You know, they've got him on a program. He's going in between starts. They've got an off-season throwing program, all those things. The Mets aren't doing anything wrong with him. But what you've got is an absolutely singular talent. And we just don't know how much it's putting on his arm. So the fact that he does pop up, and yesterday I had a source who was in the clubhouse and said they were doing a very specific test on Syndergaard's elbow. Now, you would do this test to rule out any damage. It's called a milking maneuver. I tweeted about it, and if you just look up milking elbow on YouTube, you'll see a couple examples of this if you want to see what it is. And it's to check whether or not the ulnar collateral ligament, the so-called Tommy John ligament, is intact. And obviously it is, since you know, he's not having Tommy John surgery today. But it tells you they're concerned. Is this a problem for them? And so far, not yet. But throw in that hard. When you take a look at the list of guys who throw 100 miles an hour or near it and end up popping that ligament, it's a long list. I wrote an article at the start of the year talking about the riskiest pitchers, and Syndergaard's on it. Doesn't mean he's going to get injured. You know, it's like the difference between a Camry and a Ferrari. A Ferrari's going to break down a lot more. Man, when it runs, it's pretty awesome. Camry, probably never going to break down, but not so awesome. Syndergaard's a Ferrari. So going to be a lot of maintenance, going to be a lot of time with the mechanic. You just don't want him blowing that engine.
What do you know about Zach Wheeler and how he's progressing? Anything?
Yeah, you know, Zach's coming back from Tommy John surgery, and he's having the actual Tommy John complication, which is there's a nerve that runs right in there, the ulnar nerve, what we call the funny bone. And it gets either pinched or stretched a little bit during, not exactly during the procedure, but more during the rehab. They're not exactly sure what causes this. Tommy John himself, it took him 18 months to come back, not because of the surgery and the rehab, but because they had to go back in and move that nerve, what's called transposition. And you'll see at times that guys will have a nerve transposition on its own, almost always associated with ligament problems. Some doctors, especially guys that were trained by Dr. Job, move that nerve as a matter of course. They do the surgery, they move the nerve to make sure the problem doesn't come up. Others that have been trained by Jim Andrews don't move the nerve. They say, you know, it only happens in about 30% of cases. We can always go back in if it's serious, but we just don't do it. So Wheeler was one of those. And he's having the problem. That nerve is getting stretched or pinched, and it's causing pain. Imagine every time you threw, you hit your funny bone. It's not very fun.
No.
So this is one I've gone through, and it hurts. So it's not a bad thing. It's just, it's a complication. Hmm. It's something that happens in a certain amount of the surgeries. Actually, there was a study a couple years ago done by George Folletta, who's the team doctor for the St. Louis Cardinals, he did a study on Dave Altschek's Tommy John technique, which is a little bit different than everybody else's. It's called the docking technique, and now he does a modified docking technique as well. I think it was 1 out of 25 had this complication. So it happens. You hope it goes away, that they can figure out what's causing it and get him to a point where he's comfortable. But there's nothing actually wrong with what they fixed. It's a different sort of side complication. So hopefully they'll get this. It could be something as simple as swelling. You put an anti-inflammatory in there and suddenly it's not as pinched. So this could clear up very quickly. Worst case, they go in there, they move the nerve. He misses the rest of the year, but he's back and ready to go next year.
Interesting. So moving to the position players, give me your odds that we see David Wright on field again for the Mets.
He's going to have every chance to come back. Now, whether he can or not, whether he can last or not, that's an entirely different question. But this surgery itself is not that complex. It's done on hundreds of people a day around the country. If you or I needed this surgery, actually a friend of mine is about to have this surgery, or at least it was recommended to him. He hasn't decided yet. He'll have the surgery and he'll probably be back to work 4 to 6 weeks. For me, it would be about 4 weeks because, you know, I sit at a desk and type. He works in the construction industry, need a little bit more movement when you're something's about to fall on your head or something. So he would be about 6 weeks. So it's not that complex. It's not that dangerous. You know, Peyton Manning's probably the most famous person to have this, and his symptoms and the surgery almost exactly the same as Wright's. So, you know, David Wright doesn't have 300-pound men hitting him, so that's a plus. If Peyton can do it at almost the same age, at almost the same level, you would think that he's going to be able to come back. Better comp, though, is Prince Fielder. Right. Prince Fielder had it almost the same. His was a little higher. His was at 4, Wright's is at 6. So, you know, Prince has come back. Has he come back great? No, but we don't know that has anything to do with the neck. But he's certainly come back, and he hasn't had any problems with the neck. He hasn't had any complications with the neck. You do have to kind of squint and wonder whether or not some of the fact that he's not hitting that well has to do with the neck. But he says no. So I think, you know, with those two examples, and there's a lot more, I think Wright's going to have a chance to come back. The fact they did the surgery, he's going to go through the rehab. There's no way for him to come back this year. But I think, yeah, he could have a very normal offseason. He's not going to have that big a problem with conditioning. And he, honestly, the guy's in great shape. He could let that go. So I think he's going to have every chance to come back. And I hope it's a success.
Good. Good answer. I like that. Now I feel better after hearing that. That's good. There's a lot of doom and gloom, you know, especially among Mets fans, but even reporters, people that, you know, they've been following this story for so long and it's just been one hit after another. It's been, you know, a couple years really. Since he's been healthy, and it's been more than that since he's been, you know, as productive and effective as we want. And now you're going back to when he was in his late 20s at that point. So it's almost unfair, just injury aside, to expect a guy who's 32, 33 to perform like he did when he was 28, 29. So, you know, he's getting to a point here where I think there's, like I said, there's a lot of doom and gloom around him just for whatever reason, nostalgia, reality, aging, injuries, whatever. And so, yeah, I mean, to hear that kind of description, you know, kind of sits well. The other thing
Let me drop in one other thing. Don't forget, he does have the back problem. Are they associated? Right. Well, it's the same spine. So yes, but there's no reason to think that the neck itself is problematic because the back was problematic. It could be, but we don't know that. But the back is still a problem. The lower back, that is. He's going to have to keep working on that, though the Mets did a pretty good job getting him relief, being able to go out there and be effective. This neck thing, it happened. And you know, maybe they're related, doubt it. But Bob Watkins is obviously going to get a pretty good look at it. And they can, he's got 6 months off now to keep rehabbing that as well. The other thing to keep in mind, I know people have been doom and gloom, not only on Wright, but on the Mets. And the more I talk about how good the Mets medical staff is, the more people doubt it. they came into this season and last season and the season before with one of the riskiest rosters I've ever seen. Sandy Alderson has put together a nice roster, obviously, but he's also put together a risky one. I'll go back to that Ferrari analogy. He's got a bunch of Ferraris, and it's even tougher to keep 25 Ferraris going, or 20, not all of them. But, you know, a pitching staff made up of very risky, high-velocity pitchers. A bullpen that's on a knife's edge. You've got guys like David Wright and Lucas Duda who need a lot of maintenance just to get out there each and every day. It's very, very difficult for a two-man, kind of three-man staff to keep 25-plus guys ready to rehab them, to prehab them, to prepare them for the day's game. If the Mets did anything this offseason, I wish they would have had one more athletic trainer because it would pay off in multiples that you just can't imagine.
Interesting. So how does that, yeah, how does that stack up? Because I always like sort of understanding the context of all this. I get such tunnel vision watching the Mets and talking about them and writing about them, et cetera. But, you know, you keep your eye on all of the league. So, I mean, in the context of the league, how do the Mets sort of fit in with those things? Do other teams have more trainers like that, or do they have less risky rosters? I mean, how do the Mets fit into that larger discussion?
You know, kind of both. You know, most teams have two or three. Yeah, there's some associated personnel. Obviously, there's team doctors that are around. Some of them have a masseuse that's there, strength and conditioning guys that are or aren't an athletic trainer. There's a lot of combinations. But you know, when you look at the staff and you say, how many guys are there and able to work in the training room with the team on a day-in, day-out basis? That's what I look at. And almost every team is two or three. And sometimes the three, there's a guy doing, you know, higher level, I don't want to say paperwork, but when you see the title like director of sports medicine, usually that guy got bumped upstairs and is doing higher level stuff. You'd hope he goes down there and gets his hands dirty. But again, you know, if you look at the NBA, they got 20 assistant coaches. It's almost 1-to-1. Why in God's name, for the cost of maybe $75,000, would you not add one more athletic trainer? What you got down there is 48 man hours. If you've got two, 72, if you've got three, add another 24 man hours and they work nearly that. You know, if you've been watching the NBA finals, you saw that when, gosh, who was it that was injured? But with Steph Curry being injured, there's another guy who was injured and they were saying that the trainers basically lived with him. And jeez, you get that. These guys, you know, when something happens, they basically move in. And some guys, you know, especially in the NBA, are hiring their own. Dwayne Wade of the Miami Heat works with a guy who's there 2 to 3 hours a day at his home just to keep his knees healthy. And it's obviously working. I've been more surprised that hasn't come over. We got, you know, guys have personal chefs, guys have, guys.
I think Travis Darnot just had he had his own trainer and somebody out with him in L.A. during his rehab because he wasn't at the team's complex yet. He was told to just sort of rest and do light rehab. So he had his own people kind of come in and handle that. Not the same thing, but along those lines.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, and I know Mets fans are going to react to the name, but one of the things that Scott Boras does is he has his own people. And he's got his own institute out there. He's actually opening a second one somewhere. He wouldn't tell me where. I think it's in Florida. That kind of thing, I'm stunned that more, you know, player agents and, frankly, more players. You know, athletic trainer is pretty darn cheap. You know, it's about one day's pay for a star player. So, again, it's one of those things I'd like to see more teams do, but I've been calling for that for 10 years. To get back to the Mets. Their results have been mid-pack the last couple of years.
Okay.
But again, very, very risky. So mid-pack results aren't bad per se. You know, each and every team has great medical staff, super qualified, super passionate, wants to have great results. But you got to get the results. The year that the Mets were so awful, what was that, 2007, 2008?
2009.
Because they were bad. Yeah, it was just that everything went wrong, and they got overwhelmed. You get into that death spiral where you're just trying to keep up. You can't do it, and it gets worse and worse and worse. We've seen that multiple times in multiple sports. Texas Rangers, who are one of the better teams around, had that a couple of years ago when it absolutely crushed them. And now here we are 2 years later and they're 10 games up in their division. So the Mets are a very, very risky team. You can see that.
Well, listen, man, I appreciate it. Thank you for the info and the context. Like I said, it's always good catching up, and we'll talk again soon.
Hey, thanks a lot, Matt.
Again, that was Will Carroll from FanDuel. Thanks again for listening to the MetsBlog Q&A cast presented by Citi. Citi card members get exclusive perks when they use their Citi card at Citi Field. Spend $50 or more at a Mets merchandise retail store at Citi Field and get a $10 Citi Perks gift card redeemable in the ballpark. To learn more, go to Mets.com/Citi. Thanks again to Will. Really enjoy talking with him. Always learn something new. So that was a great conversation. And also, don't forget to check out this week's Mostly Mets podcast. The guys talk to Wayne Randazzo, do a great job going through the situation with Jose Reyes and Cuban third baseman Gurriel that might be available. And they talk about Terry Collins, managerial decisions. That's always an endless conversation. So definitely check them out. They do a really good job with that show, and it's worth finding. You can look for all of our podcasts by searching SNY.TV Audio Network on iTunes or whatever platform you use to check out podcasts. And we'll be back again next week, as always, with another Q&A cast. Thanks again for listening. And as always, let's go Mets.
This has been the Mets Blog Q&A cast, presented by Citi, part of the SNY.TV Audio Network.